This coming Shabbat, in addition to the regular parsha, we are going to read. You know, we take out two Torahs sometimes. This coming Shabbat is the last time that we do it in this season, if you want, in this month. We're reading from the second Torah about Pesach. It's 2 weeks before Pesach. Then we're reading about preparing for ourselves for Pesach from the Torah. When God told Moses to prepare the Jewish people in the desert to take the Passover lamb. That's what it's all about. You see, the first Seder took place in Egypt before they left Egypt. God told the Jewish people, told Moses, tell the Jews, take the lamb, take it to your house, prepare it for slaughter it on the first Erev Pesach, on the 14th of Nisan, and take from it and make a Seder. Everybody has to come and eat the meat. And you have to finish the meat at the same night. You cannot have leftovers. No leftovers in Judaism. At least not the sacrifices. Just for you. Exactly. I'm also against leftovers.
I am a rejection to Judaism. Leftovers from the
grave. No, we don't believe in leftovers.
I always finish mine, so I never have any leftovers.
Oh, you don't have leftovers.
Clean plate club, right?
Yeah. I only finish mine. I have to finish the kids' ones.
You know? I finish theirs, too.
Then they surprise why they need to do exercise. In any case, we're going to read now from inside about this mitzvah. It's called Parshat HaChodesh. It starts with the mitzvah of counting the Jewish months. Counting months. Nisan was the first month. Go ahead.
Preparing to leave Egypt. God spoke to Moses and to Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, speak to the entire community of Israel, saying, on the 10th of this month, let each one take a lamb for each family, a lamb for each household. You shall have a perfect male lamb in its first year. You may take it either from the sheep or from the goats. You shall keep it for inspection until the 14th day of this month, and the entire congregation of the community of Israel shall slaughter it in the afternoon.
Then you have to take a lamb. In another place he writes, you have to tie it to your bed. It was a mitzvah only the first year. It's not for the rest of the Jewish history. There was no mitzvah to take it 4 days in advance. You just took it on the 14th of Nisan and you slaughter it. And the first year in Egypt, you have to take it on the 10th of the month, bring it home, tie it to your bed, and keep it for 4 days. And on the 14th of Nisan, take it, slaughter it, and then eat the meat at night by the Seder. Continue.
They shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts and on the lintel, on the house in which they will eat it. On this night they shall eat the flesh roasted over the fire and unleavened cakes with bitter herbs, and they shall eat it. This is how you shall eat it: your loins girded, your shoes on your feet, your staff in your hand, and you shall eat it in haste. It is a Passover sacrifice to God.
That was also that only for this time before they left Egypt. They had to sit with them ready to go. And you have to eat it in haste, and because it's a Passover for God, being ready to leave Egypt. That's what he said.
So when did he say that?
He said it on Rosh Chodesh Nisan.
So
God told it to Moses while he was standing in front of Pharaoh. He told it to him in his mind. But when Pharaoh told him after the ninth plague, I don't want to see you again. If I see you again, I'll kill you. Right there, he told them about the 10th plague, and he told them the whole thing. It didn't take 10 minutes. You know, it's like
the
computer in 1 second.
So the whole idea of matzah was...
In Egypt,
was
yeah.
Written, but no, but it was like weeks ahead of time.
Weeks ahead of time, sure.
So Moses didn't know the 10 plagues... the sequence of, he knew the sequence, right? But did he know everyone after certain event? Like God would tell
no, them? About the 10th plague, it's interesting. The 10th plague, he told them in the beginning, when he went the first time to Pharaoh. God told Moses, tell Pharaoh, let my firstborn son Israel go. If you don't let my firstborn son, I will kill your firstborn son before anything, he told them that. Then if Moses told it to Pharaoh or not, it's not written. But Moses heard it from God before everything. What you wanted to say?
So the matzah, I always thought matzah was because they had to leave in such a hurry. Yeah. But the matzah was already an idea weeks ahead of time.
You're right, the matzah was ahead of time. There is two reasons why we eat matzah. If you remember in the Agada, it's written in the beginning, It's called the food of bread of affliction. Which affliction? Because Jews in Egypt, as slaves, ate matzah. That's one matzah. Then God told them to eat matzah on the first night of Sukkot, of Pesach. How you know? It's written in the morning when they left Egypt that they took in their bags the leftover matzah and the maror that they were left over from last night, and they went with that. But at that time, in Egypt, he told them to eat matzah for the first night. It wasn't clear that they have to eat for 7 days. When they tried to bake the bread in the morning before they left Egypt, then they were rushed out of Egypt and they baked matzah. Then we eat matzah for two reasons. It's like you take the matzah, it's like a coin. One side you flip, one side you said it's a bread of affliction. The other side is bread of redemption. There is two reasons why we eat matzah. The same matzah has two messages. It's bread of affliction. That's why in the beginning we say in the Haggadah, this is the bread of affliction. But later when we come to them, before we actually eat the matzah, we say matzah zu. This matzah, why we eat it? And there we say in the Haggadah, because God, we were rushed out of Egypt and God had left all this thing. Then we have two reasons why we eat matzah. Maror, we just eat because to remember the affliction, the suffering. Matzah has two reasons. One reason is for the affliction, one reason is for this. There's a lot to be discussed about this in one point. Okay, continue, Reb Shevach. Yeah.
I will pass through the land of Egypt on this night, and I will smite every firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and upon all the gods of Egypt I will wreak judgments. I am God. The blood will be for you, for a sign upon the houses where you will be, and I will see the blood and skip over you. And there will be no plague to destroy you when I smite the people of Egypt.
He says, I'll pass by there, and I pass over, and I'll see the blood that you take from the Passover lamb, and you put on the doorpost. This will be the sign for God to skip over the houses of the Jewish people and not to kill the firstborn children of the Jewish people. Why should God kill the firstborn of the Jewish people? Why? What do you think? God just doesn't know where the house is. He needs a sign. He doesn't see. Oh, red. Oh, why should he kill the Jewish kids?
Why should he kill the Jewish?
He says, if not for the red, for the drop of the blood, God would not know the right address. He might by mistake kill the Jewish kid.
He wanted to, for them to observe the mitzvah of keeping Pesach, Passover, and also the notion that the people are united.
This was Egypt's idol.
So
and they put the blood into brazen. Look what we're doing.
Yeah, all on the right track. We will figure this out.
You have to have
skin in the game. Yeah. That's the ultimate vote.
Well, so you have a commandment to follow.
You give a command to follow. It's all of the above is true, and a little more.
Is there a connection between the blood on the doorpost and the mezuzah?
Yes, actually, yes. It's written in Medrash that the mezuzah is a reflection of the concept of the blood on the doorpost. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Right after that was given the mitzvah of tefillin and the mezuzah. Yeah. This day, top of the page.
This day shall be for you as a memorial, and you shall celebrate it as a festival for God. Throughout your generations, you shall celebrate it as an everlasting statute.
Yeah, this day to celebrate it throughout your generation, but not only to take the Passover lamb, not to do it 4 days in advance. Now comes Rashi.
Rashi, keep it for inspection. The lambs needed inspection 4 days before slaughter to ensure they were free of blemish.
Bichlal, in general, every sacrifice, before you bring it to the temple, before you offer it, needs an inspection to make sure it doesn't have any blemish. You don't bring to God a blemished animal, a blemished anything. Not a blemished mezuzah, not a blemished film. You bring to God the best. That something is important to you, you bring a gift to the president, you bring him the best. You bring it to the king, you bring him the best. You bring to God, you want to bring the best of you. Because when you bring the best, it shows how important is God to you. Not because God needs the best, because I need to. To me, it has to be the most important thing. But the question is, to to inspect the blemish, 4 days takes. 4 days, even if you don't have such good eyesight, it doesn't take 4 days. Go ahead, continue.
Why was this weight not practiced in future years?
Rather, because later we did not say you have to take it on the 10th and keep it until the 14th. Why only that year, the first year when they left Egypt?
Rabbi Matya ben Charash would say, the verse states, I passed by you and saw you, and behold, your time was the time of love. The time to fulfill the vow made to Abraham that God would redeem his children had come, yet they had no mitzvot in which merit to be redeemed.
Okay. He says God passed over the Jews, so to speak, before they left Egypt, and the time of redemption has arrived. The time that he promised Abraham that he'll take the Jews out from Egypt has came, but they did not have any mitzvahs. They didn't deserve to be redeemed from Egypt. It's all nice that I promised your great-grandfather, but you need to have like a little bit skin in the skin, a little bit of skin, something. And they had nothing. Continue.
They had no mitzvah which merit to be redeemed, as the verse states, you were naked and bare.
You remember in the Agada we read, and you were naked and bare? That's what I'm naked for mitzvahs. Wasn't naked physically. You were naked. They had never. A mitzvah is compared to clothing. When you the learning Torah is compared to food, and mitzvahs are compared to clothing. Why learning Torah is compared to food? You just like food, you eat it, you walk away, it's inside you. You learn Torah, you learn something, you walk away with it. A mitzvah is like film. You put it down on your hand. As long as you put it on, it's on you. You take this off, it's off you, like a clothing. Then mitzvahs are compared to clothing, and Torah is compared to food. It says you were naked. You had no mitzvahs. Go ahead.
God therefore gave them two mitzvot, the blood of the Passover offering and the blood of circumcision, which they underwent that night, as the verse states, sullied with your bloods, denoting two kinds of blood. As the verse says, you too, with the blood of your covenant, I have freed your prisoners from a pit in which there was no water. Because they were entrenched in idolatry, God said to them, draw forth, meaning, draw your hands away from idolatry and use these animals for a mitzvah.
That Reb Masio ben Chorosh, this famous rabbi who lived in the, I think, in the second under, in the year 200, in the second century, he is telling like this. He says the Jewish people, God had to gave them two mitzvahs. One mitzvah, the blood of the sacrifice to slaughter the animal and put a little bit on the doorpost. And then God said the mitzvah to Moses right there that nobody can be a part of a Passover lamb, of any sacrificial meat, only if he's circumcised. And most of the Jews in Egypt did not practice circumcision. Then they had to, if they wanted to eat from the meat of the circumcision, they had to circumcise. The meat of the sacrifice, they had to circumcise. And what happened was, they didn't want to circumcise, because it's not an easy task, but the smell of the meat from the sacrifice was so good that convinced them they circumcised because they wanted to eat from the meat. And they left Egypt right after in the morning, after the circumcision. No surprise, it took him four years, I mean.
How did they know how to do that?
Oh, you know, it's not that nobody circumcised. Thank you for the question. The Levites continued the traditional circumcision. Then they knew that they're supposed to circumcise. But most of the Jews said, it's too hard, it's too complicated, nobody else is doing it, and they just didn't do it. And God is not even upset with them. They were in exile. They were
Yet, even when they went to the desert, then they stopped again.
They stopped again. Oh, you see? Apple knows all the secrets. They stopped again in the desert. And God was not upset with them either there. Because in the desert, it was still like a practicing. Until they entered the land of Israel, it was still, things are worked out. Then it's not like they never heard of circumcision. Said, what? They knew exactly. That was a mitzvah from Abraham. Abraham already did it for himself and Isaac, and the Jewish people knew about the mitzvah of circumcision for many years before that, hundreds of years. They just didn't practice it. Then the Levites, the Hasidic Jews, the Mishugoim, did it. But the rest of the Jews didn't do it. Then now God told them, you want to eat of the meat? You have to circumcise.
So they did step in the desert, though. So, like, why, going against God, like, if you if you need to do it in Egypt to leave.
They didn't know they have to do it to leave. Suddenly one day Moses shows up, he's coming to take you out from Egypt. It was after years of suffering. They didn't know, it wasn't like it was a mess. And then God told them right before they left, hey, guys, whoever wants to date on the meat must circumcise. Then in this way, he made them, that night, they all circumcised. That was a big power, blood party. Oy, 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 oy. It was very busy that night.
It was not very comfortable walking out of Egypt.
That's why it took so long. But it's written that God, they were cured in a miraculous way. The whole thing was miraculously. Uh-huh. It wasn't like they were going around as though. Barely moving. Okay, source number two.
Our rabbi said the Jews did not seek to circumcise in Egypt. In fact, they all abolished circumcision in Egypt, except for the tribe of Levi, as the first states. And of Levi, he said, your wholeheartedness and your life.
Deuteronomy
33:8. Why? It is because they observed your word and kept your covenant.
Kept your covenant means the bris. A bris means in Hebrew a covenant.
In Egypt, God sought to redeem the Jews, but they had no merit. What did God do? He called Moses and said, go and circumcise them. Some say that it was Joshua who was there and circumcised them.
It was Moses or Joshua, but somebody did it. Continue.
The blood of the Pesach sacrifice, the blood of the circumcision, yet. God would pass into each of them, kiss them, and bless them, as it is stated. And I passed over you and saw your wallowing in your blood. And I said to you, in your blood you shall live. I said to you, in your blood you shall live. Live with the blood of the Pesach sacrifice. Live with the blood of circumcision.
In your blood you shall live. In Judaism you don't die with your blood. You live with blood. You do a little breeze, and that's it. And God appreciated it, and he hugged, and he kissed everyone, and he blessed them for doing the circumcision, for these two things that they did, two big mitzvahs, as we're going to see. Okay.
Rabbi.
The Jew from Florida, go ahead.
Starting the teaching of Rabbi Moshe Ben Karach regarding the two mitzvahs, Hashem gave Jewish people, due to their being naked and bare from these folk, a question arises. What is the significance of two mitzvahs? In order to counter the problem of nakedness, one mitzvah should be enough. And if Hashem wished to be generous with them as a verse of trust, when you see a naked person dressed them, he could have given them many mitzvahs. What is the significance of two?
The question that the Rebbe is asking, God passed by and he saw them naked, right? They have no mitzvahs. Give them one mitzvah. If one is not enough, why not five? Why two? And why these two? That's a question.
Did they witness each other?
Did you see the witness the each other, then two mitzvahs or witness each other? What does this mean?
I'm just asking.
No, in this case, not. I hear what you say, there is something, but not.
So those are the actually two mitzvahs that the Jews have to do, the original ones, right?
The original ones, yeah, that every Jew had to do. These are the two mitzvahs. The mitzvah of counting the new month was a job for Moses, but the first mitzvah the Jews actually had to do when they left Egypt is the Passover lamb and circumcised if they were not circumcised. Yes.
Also counting the first of the month also.
Well, this, that's what I said. This was a mitzvah for Moses, for the Beit Din, not for an individual Jew. It's Moses announced when's the new month. The Beit Din decides when is the court, the Jewish court decides when is the new month, not a regular person. For me and for you, that was not the first mitzvah. The first mitzvah was the Passover lamb. But the question is, why two and why these two? That's the question. Turn away, continue.
Turn away from evil and do good. The answer is that each of the two mitzvot rectified one element of the Jewish people's naked and bare state. The Jewish people at the time were suffering from a twofold deficiency. A, they were deficient in terms of do good, positive mitzvot acts. As a result, they had no merit that could bring them to the receival of the Torah, which was the purpose of the Exodus from Egypt.
To go out from Egypt, no matter you promised my grandfather, my great-grandfather, you need to have a mitzvah to deserve it. You need to do something good to be connected to God, to deserve to go out of Egypt, to receive the Torah. They did not have any positive mitzvah that they did. B, the second problem was?
They were deficient in terms of turning away from evil. They have been tainted by the evil of Egypt, and as a result, even observing positive mitzvahs wouldn't be enough to achieve redemption from Egypt. One can't fully leave Egypt if they are taking part of the evil of Egypt along with them. They would first need to wash themselves in the negativity of Egypt.
What's going on? It says, when you have, even if you leave Egypt, let's say you do something good, you're still a part of Egypt. What does this mean, you're still a part of Egypt? You're worshipping the idols of Egypt. The lamb was the idol of Egypt. That was the god. Then you cannot say, oh, I'm Jewish, I'm going to temple, to Mount Sinai. And meanwhile, I believe in another god. Mount Sinai was a conversion of the Jewish people. What's the main part of conversion? That I drop any other gods and I believe only in one god. Then I cannot still believe and worship the idol of Egypt. Most of the Jews were assimilated. They were also idol worshippers. As the Midrash says in another place, then the Satan told God, why are you taking these Jews out of Egypt? They are idol worshippers and they are idol worshippers. What's the difference? Why are you punishing the Egyptian and you kill the firstborn and you don't do it to the Jews? They're all the same. That God need to make a point that the Jews should make a statement that they are not a part of it. Then as long as you don't disconnect yourself from the idol worshipping, you cannot receive the Torah at Mount Sinai, even if you do a mitzvah. You cannot be connected to God and connected there. We cannot dance on both weddings. As Elijah told, if you remember the class, Elijah told to the Jews, for how long are you going to dance on both weddings? Make up, it's God or the idol or the Baal. The same thing is here. The Egyptian, the God of the Egyptian, or the God of the Jews, the real God or the fake God? That was the question. This is why, finish.
This is why they were given two mitzvot. The positive act of a mitzvah circumcision, which would bring them into the covenant of Hashem, and the mitzvah that would clean them of evil, the Pesach sacrifice.
Then there is a verse in the Bible that says, Sur merah v'asei tov, turn away from evil and do good. You have to do two things. You have to deny evil and you have to do good. Then with one mitzvah, when they took the idol and slaughtered it, you know, we don't realize and we don't appreciate what was meant in Egypt to do this mitzvah. It was the idol of Egypt. Egypt is a superpower. That was their idol. The Jews are slaves. Okay, they don't work, they're not subjugated, they don't have to go to work every day for the last 6 months before they left Egypt, but they were slaves. Nothing changed. They should take the God of the Egyptians, slaughter it, is risking their life. Every one of them literally had to risk his life because people ask him, well, what are you doing? He's taking the animal to his room, to his house. He's taking the God to his house and he ties it to his bed. And the Egyptian neighbor asks him, what's this? He said, oh, we're going to slaughter it. You're going, what? To slaughter it? Our God will kill you. Can you imagine if you would do something like this today and in one of these countries, whatever God is, whatever. You go to Iran and you burn or whatever, you do something that's against their religion, there would be the end of the world. For the Jews to go in Egypt and to slaughter the God of Egypt was a huge risk. It took risking their life, self-sacrifice. The Jews?
Right.
Why should they do it?
Yep. Wasn't
because
you're worshiping idols, you're eating, you're breathing.
Well, they saw the nine plagues, and they wanted to get, and they saw the power of God. And when Moses came and told them, "Go and do it," they were already in a stage that they were ready to go to risk their life to do the will of God. That self-sacrifice. The risking their life made them deserve to leave Egypt. You need to deserve to leave Egypt. For a big miracle, you need to deserve it. You're right, it was not a normal thing to do. Because I'm sure many people said, well, what are you doing? They'll kill you. Your neighbors will kill you. That take risking the life, yeah.
The human nature is to just keep doing whatever you did yesterday, just to not do something new. So
The whole 6 months was one huge journey of miracles. The blood, the frog, every mitzvah of the 10th plague, every one of the 10th plague was a huge miracle. Then by the time that came to the number 10, the Jews knew what Moses tells them to do, they better do because they're going to leave Egypt. The Ibotem, the journey of the 10 plague was not only for Egypt. God could get the Jews out of Egypt in a minute. A big part of it was preparing the Jews to leave Egypt, to change their psyche. One plague after the other, they saw the miracle, and they knew that there is a God. And by the 10th plague, they were ready to take a risk, ready to die for the sake of God. They knew that God will help them, but nobody knew how this was going to play out. Moses told them, go take the Egyptian, the God of the Egyptians, slaughter him. That was a huge risk. And you're right, it's amazing.
But it sounds like also there was a change in the psyche of the Egyptians. And here's Jews and Egyptians. They're in houses next to each other for some strange reason. Slaves are living with people. But at the same time, those Egyptians saw in those 6 months these miracles that were put on them by God. So they must have had fear in themselves.
Absolutely. It's written that it's written in the Torah. When they came to the Jews and asked, why are you doing it? They said, in 4 days, God is going to kill all the firstborn Egyptian, and we are going to go out of Egypt.
They wanted him to leave at that point, right?
Then the firstborn heard it, they went to Pharaoh and they told him, let the people go, because we don't want to die. Pharaoh said no. Then they started to riot, like in America, just the same thing. They rioted. Then Pharaoh sent out his army to control the riots. There was a war between Pharaoh's army and the firstborn Egyptian in Egypt on behalf of the Jewish people. That was 4 days before they left Egypt. And that was on Shabbat. That's why this Shabbat is called Shabbat HaGadol, the Shabbat of the Great Miracle, because Egyptian fought against Egyptian on behalf of the Jews.
Where is it written? I never heard about that.
You heard about it.
It's a good book.
Mm-hmm. You heard about it. We learned about that a few times. And you heard about it. But yeah, but listen.
The Egyptians for the Egyptians?
Yeah. That's what Shabbat HaGadol is all about. It's not written in the text itself. It's written in the Talmud and in Rashi, in the Medrash, everywhere. Then this what really happened. Then the Egyptians knew to believe in the Jew, to believe Moses. The Jews learned to believe Moses. But still it was a huge risk. And to take it for 4 days... It means then people are more, it's not like you take it, you do it fast and nobody, it's too late. Yet, it was a long journey. Go ahead.
Antibiotics for idolatry.
Antibiotics, oh, that's nice.
How did the Pesach sacrifice turn the people away from evil? Rashi explains, because they were entrenched in idolatry, God said to them, draw forth, meaning draw your hands away from idolatry and use these animals for a mitzvah. The Pesach sacrifice nullified the Jewish people's entrenchment in idolatry. We already learned in the Torah portion of Vayera that sheep were an Egyptian deity. Therefore, the very act of taking a lamb, an Egyptian object of worship, for the purpose of slaughter, would sever their connection with idolatry. Moreover, the actual slaughter of the lamb would completely counter their state of immersion in idolatry.
They were immersed in idolatry. It wasn't just like a little bit. Then the whole thing was they needed a therapy session of getting over the idolatry. That was their God, not just the Egyptian God. They worshipped it. Most of the Jews, many Jews, were believing in this idol. Then for them to get out of it, you needed to completely. It wasn't in 1 minute. And you do, as we're going to learn in a minute, what it means. Okay, source number three.
Source number three, Midrash Rabbah Shema. Go and take for yourself lambs. That's what's written. All who serve engraven images shall be shamed. Psalm 97:2-7. When Hashem said to Moses to slaughter to Pesach's offering, Moses said to him, Master of Universe, how can I do so? Do you not know that lambs are the gods of Egypt? As it's stated, behold, were we to sacrifice the abomination of the Egyptian before their eyes, would they not stone us? Exodus 8:22.
Then he says, Moses was wondering, are you asking from the Jewish people to do something like this? They should slaughter the god of Egypt? They will stone us.
God said to him, By your life, Israel will not depart from here until they slaughter the God of Egypt before their eyes, as I would thereby inform them that their gods are nothing.
The Jews are not leaving Egypt until they deny idols in a way that there is the life to go out to in front of the Egyptian. You don't go, you cannot, you don't deserve to leave Egypt if you don't do a real act of self-sacrifice in connection to God.
You had asked earlier why put the blood on the doorpost. I'm not sure if we actually answered why we would need to. God would already know. I don't think it was for the sake of God. It was for the sake of the Egyptians.
Beautiful. For the sake of the Jews.
To yes.
For the Jews to deny their own idol.
But it was showing.
Also showing to the Egyptian. Yeah, it's making it public, yes, because that's where the risk comes when you make it public. First of all, if you believe in this and you have to break it, that's a sacrifice for you. It's then, in addition to it, when you do it in public and you know that people can kill you, that's a huge risk.
So it really was to deny idolatry.
Absolutely, deny idolatry.
That's the reason.
Yes, yes, yes. God says until these guys don't get over the stupid idolatry, the Jews themselves, and are ready to die for it, there's nobody to talk to. It wasn't just, he didn't know the address of the houses. He wanted to, they had to deserve to go out of Egypt. They had to deny the idol, they had to disconnect themselves from all paganism. That was it all about. Yes, yes, you're right. It's never about that God doesn't know the address, that we don't know the address. That's a problem. Go ahead.
And so it was on that night he smote the firstborn of Egypt. On that night Israel started their paschal offering and ate them. And the Egyptians saw their firstborn killed and the God slaughtered, and they were unable to do anything.
Two things, two tragedies happened to them. The firstborn had died, the Jews are slaughtering the God, they didn't know what to do. They were lost completely, and they couldn't do anything.
As it is stated, the Egyptians were burying the womb the Lord has smitten among them, and their firstborn, and upon their gods, the Lord administered punishment. Numbers 33:4. And that is all who serves graven images shall be shamed.
Go ahead, continue.
Why 4 days, Rabbi? We can now also understand why the lamb was taken and held 4 days before its Lord.
That's the question is, okay, you need to kill the Egyptian idol. Why need 4 days to keep it in your house? To keep the lamb in your house next to your bed, the smell and everything?
That's probably living in fear too. Like.
And yeah, and for 4 days? Why for, and later when the Jews, for the rest of history, the Passover lamb, you took it the same time. You didn't schlep it to your house for 4 days. I wouldn't survive it. What's my chance? It's a zoo, three dogs, two cats, and a lamb.
You have to bring the dogs, huh?
People live in a zoo in today's world. There is a place for human, a place for animals. Okay, we'll not get into it. Continue. Go ahead.
The Jewish people, having just casual idol worship, they were entrenched in it. They needed a treatment that would uproot this practice from them. Had they taken the lamb and slaughtered it immediately, this would merely have been a one-time action and wouldn't have been able to uproot their deep immersion in idolatry. However, by holding the lamb in their homes for a significant period of time, they were able to uproot their attachment to
it. You see, if they would, let's say Moses shows up, take it now, slaughter it. They would do it with, and they say, Moses scared us, we did it. But it doesn't mean you really changed. When you do a quick act, it doesn't mean you really changed. It's like you tell your child, say thank you, he runs, he says thank you, and he runs away. It didn't change. If you really want a person to change, to really, yes, he needs to have this idol, this lamb in his house, and reflect on it for 4 days that he's going to slaughter it, and look at them, and think about it, and think it over again, and again, and wake up in the middle of the night, and think about it again, I'm going to slaughter the idol. And we needed a therapy session of 4 days.
Immersion therapy.
Yeah. It's called immersion therapy?
I don't know. There's a term for it. I don't know.
Yeah, what's immersion therapy?
Like exposure therapy, like your biggest fear.
You go into it.
You have to get close to it. You look at it. You get whatever. Elevators, whatever, heights.
Like me with dogs would be.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're gonna have a dog.
Right here, sitting here. We're going back and forth and back and forth.
Yeah, right. You're
going to
look.
Okay. And I'll start to pet them. Yeah. They will become friends. We'll kiss each other. Yeah, they will be all amazing.
No slaughtering, though.
No slaughtering. No. You never know. Then that's what will be.
But the question is, like, usually bring this animal like that home.
That's a whole thing. That's
only if you name it.
That would be a problem too, you're right. But to slaughter it, it would be hard, yes. Yes, but first of all, that's your God. But get the concept of 4 days thinking about it, that was the whole therapy was invented because of this. It was right there in the Bible. God was the biggest therapist. Earlier, go ahead.
To sacrifice Isaac, Rashi explained that God showed Abraham the location for the ostensible sacrifice only on the third day of traveling. So the people shouldn't say that God surprised Abraham and confused him. But had he been able to deliberate the matter, he would never have done it.
You know, the Rebbe says, will we see that 4 days is the time to to think about something, to deliberate it, and to... When God told Abraham to sacrifice his son Isaac, Abraham was in Hebron. We eventually told him to sacrifice on the Temple Mount, on Mount Moriah. From Hebron to Jerusalem doesn't take more than 5 hours on a donkey or something. Then it's written, by the third day he showed them the place. What means Abraham got up early in the morning. God told him, let's say on a Sunday, go sacrifice the son. Monday morning he got up early. He got ready. He prepared his donkey and they are going. For 3 days he was walking. He didn't know where God wants him to do it. On the third day God showed him where the Temple Mount and he knew where to go. Why 3 days? What's the schlep of 4? Basically it's 4 days. One day and then another 3 days. That Rashi says something amazing. The world shouldn't say he shocked him. He went and he did a stupid thing. He slaughtered his son. Then he regretted it. You know, many people do stupid things. Then God gave him the first day and then another 3 days. He has enough time to think it over again and again and again and again and again. And that's a proof for why God wanted 4 days by us. Source number 4, please.
Suddenly it deranged his mind, and if he had time to think it over, he would not have done it. Saw the place. He saw a cloud attached to the mountain. If he had time to think it over, therefore he delayed until the third day, as we find regarding prayer. One's mind is nor settled until the third day after night and home.
You know, there is a Jewish law, don't take it home, but there is such a Jewish law that if you come from a long traveling, it can take you 3 days until you are clear enough to daven, to have a real good prayer. It doesn't mean you shouldn't daven, but in the old days when they were really concentrating in this, that could take 3 days. But you see the idea in Jewish law that 3 days after a big voyage, you're still confused. You're not there, you're not back. I can tell you that when you come back from Israel from a long trip and takes you 3 days at least to recover from the change, you know, the whole, yeah, the jet lag and everything around it. Finish it, the Rebbe.
Rebbe, we see that a waiting period of 4 days is an indicator that the action is being performed calmly and with full conviction. This was the case with Abraham, as the third day of his journey was the fourth day since he received the command, take your son. He embarked on his journey the morning after the command.
Then he had 4 days. The same thing is here. God told us 4 days. We learn from here that it takes 4 days to do something calculated and a smart decision. You know, many people before they say, I heard from many people, they write the emails at night. and they leave it to the morning, and then they read it over again, and if they like everything that's there, and when they are clear, and they after the coffee and this, then they send the email. That's a good thing. If you wouldn't say something to your wife, you would think it over all night, you would know everybody would be happily married forever and ever. You still want to say something, then keep it, sleep on it, then you'll say it again. If you think in the morning it's still a smart thing to say, then say it. If not...
Probably 4 days is better.
I like it.
Everyone looking at me.
We might hear more on that subject.
Maybe in 4 days.
Yeah.
In 4 days.
Rabbi, what is or who is Gar Aria?
Gar Aria is a commentary to the Bible. To the town. Yeah, to the Bible.
Like Russia and
yeah, even, yeah. Okay.
In Rome, of all places, the Rebbe, Yeshiva.
In Rome.
In Rome. Rashi mentioned that the name of the sage who stated this teaching was Rabbi Matiah ben Harash. Rashi worded Rabbi Matiah ben Harash would say, meaning that it was a teaching he would constantly repeat to his students. Mm-hmm. The reason this teaching was so important to him was because it served to explain his
okay.
practice.
Then what do you learn there? That they needed the two mitzvahs. One mitzvah to deny themselves, to cut themselves up from idol worshiping, and the mitzvah of bris to make a covenant with God, to divorce myself from the idols and to make a covenant with God. That's why these two mitzvahs. Why not one, 10 mitzvahs? Why not one mitzvah? I needed one mitzvah to remove myself from bed and one mitzvah to do good. Who said it? Who is the rabbi who gave this teaching? Matiah ben Harash. Matiah ben Harash used to say, whenever in the Talmud it's written, he used to say, means that was his slogan, that was his message, that was his mission statement. He constantly said it. Why he said it? Continue. The Talmud
relates that Rabbi Matiah's yeshiva was located in Rome. There were other yeshivot in existence at the time, including yeshivot in the land of Israel, but Rabbi Matiah's yeshiva and rabbinical court, which were the largest of the time, were in Rome.
See, Rabbi Matiah ben Harash, they were at the same time when Rabbi Akiva had the yeshiva in Bnei Brak, Matiah ben Harash had the yeshiva in Rome. Why are you going to Rome? What you lost in Rome? Go to Bnei Brak. Rabbi Lezer the Great had a yeshiva in Lod. People had yeshivas in other places. Why Rome? That was the question.
Why did Rabbi Matiah establish his yeshiva specifically in Rome?
And he had the biggest yeshiva, by the way. Yeah, yeah. It was Rome is Rome. It was a small city at that time, yes. And he had the biggest yeshiva of that time.
Doing so required his students to leave their homes in order to attend his yeshiva. As the Talmud says, pursue justice. That means follow the sages to study in yeshiva. Follow Rabbi Matiah to Rome. Why did he not establish his yeshiva in Israel, like Rabbi Akiva did in the city of Bnei Brak?
Yeah, I mean to say it like this. There is a Talmudic statement on the verse in the Bible, Tzedek, Tzedek, Tzedok, pursue justice. One of the meaning of this statement is, You should go to learn Torah. Wherever the great rabbi say, go there. Don't stay home and wait. They should send you or give you a class on Zoom. You have to get up and go to the yeshiva. In Judaism, it's very encouraged to exile yourself to learn Torah. A boy needs to learn Torah, should stay home next to his mother and should take care of him and give him supper and give him this and take, get up, throw him out of the house, should go to yeshiva, live in a dormitory and become a mensch. You know, when we were 13 years old, my kids, they weren't even younger than. In 24 hours, you became a mensch. Mm-hmm. You knew that your mommy is not here, and that's it. You better shape up or you're in trouble. Because then, the real way to learn Torah is when you exile yourself. Eve golelim kom Torah. You have to exile yourself to learn Torah. Only in a place that you don't know anybody, you can immerse yourself in learning Torah. It's like going to college, you're going to a different city, to a small college town, and you learn Torah there. You don't have any, you learn what you learn there. You don't have anything else. Then the Talmud says, pursue justice. Go. Then one of the names that they use, go after Rabbi Akiva to Bnei Brak, and they used go after Matiah ben Harash in Rome. Then why should I tell a Jewish boy who is 17 years old or 15 years old, leave your house in Israel and go to Rome to learn by Matiah ben Harash? Why did he set up a yeshiva in Rome? What's going on?
Can I ask you a question? Why did they say, why did they use the word justice?
Now, that's a verse in the Bible. Justice, justice, pursue. Then one of the meaning the rabbis learned is the Torah is justice.
Oh, okay.
That's why. But the original meaning is you should pursue justice. You should make sure that everything is true, is correct, and is just. But then one of the meanings is this. Go ahead. Duplik, you want to continue?
Yeah. The teaching Rabbi Matthew would often repeat was a source of comfort to his students who had to come to Rome. He has telling them that the redemption depends on the existence of Yeshivot in Rome. Finding a Jew in a Rome state of naked and bare and transforming them into Yeshiva student occupied in Torah study. This is why Rabbi Matthew Yeshiva was in Rome, the center of exile, in order to assist those Jews in their bringing the redemption.
Why Matthew Mechorach was speaking about it? Because he lived it. He understood what happened in Egypt. The Jews in Egypt were so assimilated, they were naked of mitzvahs. You need to put a mitzvah on them. He tells his student, why Rome? Because Rome is full of assimilated Jews. And we need to go and find them and dress them. They're naked of mitzvahs. If we want to bring the Moshiach, we want to bring redemption to the Jews, we need to connect them to a mitzvah. Why not sitting in Bnei Brak? Because the Jews in Bnei Brak are not naked. They know they have mitzvahs. We need the Jews in Rome. Then he established a yeshiva in Rome. And that's why he said this teaching, because he was living by it. He didn't just say it. Saying speeches is very nice. It's all about practicing it. That's why the Rashi brings who said it. Matthew Bechorosh took yeshiva student to Rome because he says it's not only for you to learn Torah. You go out, you reach out to other Jews in Rome. There were Jews in Rome at that time.
It's Chabad that took the holy principle, go and...
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. That's why we learned that.
When was this?
What? Rome, it was the second century. There were a lot of Jews in Rome. After the destruction of the second temple, there were many, many... There were complete streets in Rome were closed on Shabbat because there were so many Jews in Rome. And therefore, it was also a lot of assimilation. There is a reason why the Romans and the Italians and the Jews look alike and practice a lot of things that are similar. There is a reason for it. Then the Jews, was a lot of Jews in Rome and was not enough Jews with Torah. Then Matthew ben Chorosh left, he used to live in Israel. The Talmud says a story that once they all decided, it was the Romans did such chores in Israel, they decided to leave Israel. They came to the borders of Israel, started to cry, and decided they're not leaving Israel. But later, Matthew ben Chorosh alone, he himself went to Rome. But he didn't leave because there was chores in Israel. He realized that the center of the Jewish life is in Rome, the richest and the most influential Jews in Rome, and we need to save them. We have to go there and to spread Judaism. Then he asked them, Rabbi, why Rome? Told them, why Rome? Because the Jews are naked in Egypt. They're naked now. And this is the foundation of all the Rabbi's campaign, exactly. The Rabbi was in the Rome of our days. Why New York? Why running around in Manhattan and asking Jews, you want to put on film? Get alive. Go to a small land, a place in Israel, learn Torah, and be immersed in Mea Shearim, and learn. The Rebbe says, because Masih ben Chorosh. This talk was said right when the Rebbe came out with all the campaigns of tefillin and mezuzah and matzah and all the order and lighting candles on Friday night. All of this happened. All the yeshivas used to go there every Friday, every other opportunity they had to spread Judaism. And the Rebbe basically doesn't invent new things. He took something from the Torah and he explained what he's doing it. I heard from people about there when the Rebbe spoke it, that the Rebbe spoke it with a lot of enthusiasm and emotion. It wasn't just a regular talk. It was he laid down the case for the Ochabad outreach. Absolutely, that was what it was.
But all the Rebbe's prior to the Rebbe, like Alter Rebbe and all others, it's just they did not have this opportunity, like they could not see it, that because I was thinking it's just Chabad was born with this idea, kind of just to go. And as you were saying, the Rebbe took it to the different level because it was an opportunity to send people or to ask them to go there.
It was.
Was it like the principle of the Chabad before to do this?
In general, yes, but practiced in a very small. And you need to understand in Russia, most of the Jews were religious. It was a different job, is to bring them to Hasidic philosophy. not wasn't so much about they were completely naked for mitzvahs. And then later it became more and more and more. And the Rebbe came to America, and that's where it was a different world, and he needed to save Judaism. It was a matter of a fire that we, any boy or girl you don't save now, a week later can be intermarried or assimilated. Might be too late. Go ahead.
Mitzvah campaigns in Manhattan. There's
Where you're going, mitzvah campaigns in Manhattan.
There is a practical lesson for us to derive from this teaching. We are deep into the final exile, which is referred to as the Roman exile. Knowing the teaching of the sages that the pre-appointed times for the coming of Mashiach have already passed, the Jewish people ask, we have been in exile for 2,000 years already. How much longer will we suffer in exile? Mm-hmm. Rashi gives us a response to this argument. If we were only supposed to leave exile, that could have been achieved many years ago. However, God desires that every Jew should leave exile with mitzvot, not naked and bare. This relates to the Rabbi Ryan's...
Okay, it means to say God cannot take the Jews out from the exile until they have one link. You know what a mitzvah is? A mitzvah means tzavta. From the word tzavta means a connection. Mitzvah is not just a good deed. We can do good deeds. We're not doing good deeds. We are not busy with good deeds. We are busy with connections, connecting to God. A bris is a connection. Even if it's not necessarily a good deed, that's the baby. We're not telling you it's a good deed. I mean, eating on Yom Kippur is not necessarily a good deed. It's a mitzvah. It's all about connections. Then God wanted, God needs, we should connect every Jew in the world. Link, give him a link. You know, it's like the boat is sinking. To pull out the boat from the water, you need many, many connections to the boat all around to be able to pull it out. We need, Jewish people are really drowning in the world, in the sea of this world. Then we give everyone a string to hold on. Not a thousand string, but something. The moment you make a connection, he's already connected. He will not be lost. Then you run around all over the world and you make connections. That's what it's all about. We are not here to make from anybody rachosi that a long white beard. Actually, we don't want them like this. what we want is to make connections. And every one of us, every one of you who's sitting by a table, when you invite somebody to the Seder, you make a connection. It's all about making one connection and one more connection and another person, another person. And that's to be able to get the Jews out of exile, we need to connect. Because it's written, then we cannot lose one Jew. Until the last Jew will not be connected, we will not be able to be redeemed. We need to connect every Jew. You see, in Egypt, it wasn't like this. In Egypt, people didn't want to leave. We told them, stay there. But that was in Egypt, before Mount Sinai. After Mount Sinai, every Jew is our child, child of God. And we cannot say, I'm taking care of myself, my family is okay, and my cousin, my friend. Every Jew in the world, that's why the old Chabad movement. Going out, going to Zambia, to looking for Jews. Well, you have nothing else to do with your life. My niece from Alaska went to Zambia. Alaska is not good enough. You have to go to Zambia. Not far enough. She had to outdo your parents.
More Jews in Zambia than Alaska?
There might be. Not too many, but there is a bunch of Israelis there, then Americans, and the two communities are fighting with each other. It's beautiful. It's Jewish. Then, because until the Jew, I have a brother now, he moved to Thailand, to Phuket. Until you have to find every Jew everywhere and make a connection. That's what it's all about. Continue.
This relates to the Rabbi Ryatz who passed away on the Shabbat when the portion of Bo in which this teaching appears was read. The Rebbe Ryatz devoted himself to spreading Torah and mitzvot to the point of risking his life. He worked to spread practical mitzvah observance among all types of Jews, and even on an individual level. There are many well-known stories about this. He explained his conduct in one of his talks, citing the verse, probably should be stating, when you see a naked person, dress them. Do not ignore your relative. This means the Rebbe Ryatz explained that when we see a Jew bare of tzitzit and tefillin, we must dress them.
You see, this verse, it's from, I think, from Isaiah or from Jeremiah. But this verse says that we say it on the Haftorah from Yom Kippur in the morning. When you see a naked person, dress him. That the previous Rebbe said, you see a naked person from mitzvahs, dress him. You see somebody hungry spiritually, feed them. Thank God nobody runs around naked because he doesn't have clothing in America. At least not in our neighborhood, right? Nobody's hungry. Nobody. The problem of America is obesity, not hunger. Right? That's the biggest problem. Everybody's busy with hunger. It's obesity, not hunger. But will we have hunger? Spiritual hunger we have. Spiritual nakedness. And he says you have to go out and save everyone. Go ahead.
To facilitate this work, the Rebbe Ryatz established his yeshiva in the diaspora in exile. He established it in the bustling center of the city in order to search out for Jews that are naked and bare of
in the home of our generation.
And give them a mitzvot or two to observe and to continue to grow in observance.
That's why the Rebbe came out, you know, the Chabad, the campaign, the mitzvah campaign is 10 mitzvahs. The Rebbe chose. Mitzvahs that are easy for Jews to do. A mezuzah, tefillin, lighting candles, giving charity, having a few books in your house, and so on. Or the mitzvahs of the holiday. You give somebody shmure matzah. He has a matzah to eat for Pesach. You tell him, let's say the blessing over the love and the talk. Easy mitzvahs that he can connect to every Jew. Go run around the street. Oh, you're Jewish? Say the blessing over the love. Just the other day, somebody sent me a picture on Friday. He was in Detroit, and some two yeshiva students caught him, and they forced him to put him on film. He sent me a picture of it. That's what it's all about. Connections. Go ahead.
Rabbi Reich is the previous Rabbi?
The previous Lubavitcher Rabbi. Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Schneerson. He is the Rabbi's father-in-law. He came to America in 1940, and really, when he came, and then Rebbe came a year later, then the whole outreach took a whole different level when they came to America. That's where really it started.
When we are redeemed from this final exile, not a single Jew will be left behind. We must therefore search after every Jew, wherever they are, and ensure they possess at least one mitzvah, so they shouldn't be naked. The redemption of the entire Jewish people depends on this.
You know, Rabbi Jonathan Sachs said, Hitler hunted every Jew to kill him. And Chabad hunts every Jew to bring him closer to God. But nobody will escape. Wherever there, everywhere in the world there is God and there is Chabad. Thank you very much. Right.